right, we're recording.
Yeah, I want to be on as a logistical expert.
Consultant. Oh, no, that would actually be money.
Yeah,
right?
We can't say, can't use the term consultant. Right. I'd have to charge you.
Yeah. I don't think their budget has got enough for your time.
No, you couldn't afford. You can't.
Yeah,
can't.
No, I know.
I'll tell you
I
now,
know.
You can't afford me.
I know.
Even
I know.
With a heavily discounted rate. That's okay.
Like the buddy rate. Hey, buddy.
We don't have buddy. There's no such thing as a buddy rate.
I love it when business Chris leaks out. Like it definitely was like I crossed a line there and all of a sudden got to hear a little business Chris.
I don't lie.
Yeah.
So I have to be honest with you.
You can't afford me.
Buddy? What does the word buddy mean?
Buddy. There are no buddies.
There's no buddies in business.
Yeah.
Business buddies. It's my new oxymoron. Speaking of oxymorons, welcome to Lost and Found and Rewound Season 2. We're back. I'm Chris Lost.
I'm Found Jim.
And I'm Rick Rewound. And apparently I've been in some kind of alternate dimension because I feel like we've done at least 3 seasons of this show already. But apparently this is only Season 2 we're starting on.
We just did 1 season. I've been keeping track. Don't worry.
How many? So what you're talking about is kind of like old school like television. I've been watching a lot of old school television. It's like a season would have 39 episodes, whereas now a lot of TV shows they're only 8 episodes. Like they don't even do a 13-week season anymore. Like I've seen a couple of shows that have only been 8 episodes, and it's obvious it's
the British model.
Yeah, it's the British model. Yes.
And but that's what we were following.
Were we? Yeah. I feel like we're following the, I Love Lucy model where it's like 39 episodes and then...
But they would do that in less than a year, but we just took 3 years or four right. years to do
But
it.
That doesn't make a season.
Well,
season.
Yeah, we only did 12 episodes and then we did a number of specials and then we did we teed them up. So it was almost like the tee ups were commercials for the episodes and then there were the episodes. But actually, one thing we should say, we're going to do this season in sequence. Season 2 in sequence.
Did we not do that with the other season?
No, this is the fast forward for episode 1. And we're doing it prior to actually watching the movie and prior to talking about the movie.
And that's not what we did before.
We did them like a year later.
And that was because we were saving episodes initially.
We were banking them, yeah.
I'm starting to remember all of this.
Okay. What happened was we were banking the episodes, and then we aired one episode, and my brother-in-law said, hey, you need to do a preface episode so that people know what to watch.
Right. Previously on Lost and Found and Rewound, season 1.
So now we're going to time box this preface episode.
Time box.
Why is this?
Man. Is that the movie we're watching?
Yeah, well, we'll be watching the film Time Box.
Cool.
Which is it's about a logistical consultant who charges his friends exorbitant rates.
And remind me again, is it Rutger Hauer or Klaus Kinski who's in that?
Oh, Klaus Kinski. Rutger Hauer can't pull off that kind of role. Even though he's like some astrophysicist or something, he is actually really intelligent in
but
real
it's
life.
An AI version of him, Klaus, because he's dead. So it's a new movie, but...
It's a new movie.
Yeah.
Now I'm totally confused.
So it's just AI Klaus.
Let me correct that. It's not Rutger Hauer that's smart, right? Or who played Ivan in Rocky IV? Rocky Ive.
Dolph Lundgren?
Dolph Lundgren. He's the one that's really smart, right?
I just saw the most disturbing. Is it an Old Spice ad? No, it's not. Is it Old Spice? The deodorant ad with a obviously. Youth, de-aged Dolph Lundgren, and I think it's badly de-aged on purpose, spraying sweat out of his armpits. And I guess that's the whole point of this ad, is that I see it, and then I talk about it. Just like this other ad that's about puppy pepperoni sticks that is obviously a reference to Memento, and it is so freaking confusing, I will need to show it to you guys, and then maybe we'll do a whole episode on this 30-second commercial.
To commercialize Memento is daring.
I would say maybe that would be daring 25 years ago. When did Memento come out? I'd say now. I don't think it's daring. You just have to watch it.
I did have a revelation about Christopher Nolan, is that he's a bad filmmaker. And that I think he does beautiful scenes, but terrible stories. Because I don't know if he writes his own stuff or what, but his shit doesn't make sense. It all looks great.
Well, he used to write with his brother. So his brother was the origin, kind of. His brother's short story was the inspiration for Memento. And I think his brother wrote the script. His brother wrote a lot of the early scripts, but then his brother went off. And I'm trying to remember the...
Westworld. He never really tied that up nicely.
But that first season's great. First season of Westworld's great.
It was
good. And
then
his partner, wife, is also a showrunner. I'm trying to remember what shows she would run. So, yeah. But they've split off. Yeah, so they don't write together anymore. So I think there are probably some issues there. But, yeah, no, I agree. We're not going to talk about Oppenheimer, are we? But just, yeah, a little bit about Oppenheimer, where it was just like, oh, yeah, it like would swing so wildly from pretty impressive stuff, I think, but then, yeah, just really awful 50s-era dialogue, but not in a, you know, ironic way, or people talking about their lives while riding on horses kind of stuff, which, I mean, I definitely had a feeling of, like, you know, what Gary Cooper and... Let's see, who else from what woman from the 1950s would it be, you know, riding on horses and talking about something serious on a ranch? But it seemed almost too much like that cheesy, non-human dialogue in Oppenheimer. There were moments where I got a little freaked out.
We'll mention Oppenheimer because it's a very Allies version of, you know, what happened in World War II, sort of an Allies reflection of World War II. And the film we're watching today, just a bit of a hint, is a very Axis reflection on what happened during World War II.
And interesting.
One of the reasons why I love that particular type of cinema. A bit more of a hint, we're going to be watching a film that happened in 2016. This is, I mean, we did watch Midsommar. And
that's true.
The other one, Hereditary, those, I'm not sure when those happened, but they happened fairly recently.
So yeah, it's really interesting, Chris. You have a lot of these kind of very firmly defined ideas about the structure of the show, like it being only 12 episodes long, even though we did 36 and only one season. Yet the initial conceit of it was that, oh, these were films we saw on VHS, and now you have no problem throwing that out the window.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that a little later. Anyway, let's do our age. You know, this is Lost and Found Rewound, so we got to stick to our segments. It is important to follow the structure of the show. I agree, Rick. I apologize is the first, and I have an apology here for Jim. On Monday, April 24th, 2023, I took a plane to Chicago and arrived a little later than expected. I then took a cab to the Music Box Theater in Chicago, Illinois, with plans to see the film Runaway Train, with Found Jim, Rick Lost, and a host of other friends, including all of the original members of the art rock group Bully Pulpit. Footnote, Rick Lost could not attend due to his ailments. Frazzled from nearly missing the film's beginning and inexplicably in a state of mania, I charmed the bartender into pouring me a generous triple margarita. We then sat down to what was a particularly delightful watch of Runaway Train, while I guffawed and rapidly consumed my drink along with a beer or two. After the film, we went to a local pub where my mania and inebriation caused me to blather on at the mouth in such a fashion that it even tried the patience of the most patient creature on earth, Found Jim. Jim, I am truly sorry for being a trying presence that evening, and I promise to be a more stable friend to you moving forward.
Well, thank you. I accept it, but you're not necessary. It wasn't that bad.
Did I miss it because I had COVID?
You were sick.
I was sick, but that wasn't the COVID time. Okay. It was in April?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, no, I didn't have COVID that time. I was sick, though.
You were sick.
Right? I had COVID later.
Been
again.
Busy, too. I mean, it was like a weeknight. It would have been a...
But I was quite sick. I do remember being sick.
Quite a thing to, drive all the way to see
a movie I've seen a bunch of times.
Several times. But in a movie theater. It was cool to see it in the movie theater. That was great.
I had a blast.
With the audience. Not taking it seriously. I don't think they took the movies as seriously as I had hoped.
Were you upset?
I was laughing the whole thing.
It was amazing.
There's one part where the ending and the one guy. Back, it was just like, wow, when the quote came on, the whatever Richard III or the Shakespeare quote at the end, it just was like, wow, you know, he just starts screaming thing. Like that. Yeah,
yeah, well, I didn't find that funny. Yeah.
I don't know if Jim remembers, but we saw Pope of Greenwich Village in the theater, right?
Yeah.
And I actually laughed during the dramatic scene about the thumbs. That was where I was just like, okay, I was on board with Eric Roberts until then.
Well, you talked about the Titanic, probably.
Yes, and Titanic too. Laughing yeah, we've, at, yeah, we've gone he, over that. Yeah, yeah that yeah. Spent a good time chuckling through Titanic. Yeah, sitting behind two young ladies who had seen it hundreds of times and thought it was the best movie in the world.
Yeah, we covered that. I've listened to the whole season. Yeah. I'm now listening back to it. We've covered these moments.
You're our institutional memory.
Both of those moments, yeah, we've covered.
I did hear a little bit about Eric Roberts, which is he'll do a gig. He loves acting. I heard it from a secondhand source, someone who's worked directly with Eric Roberts, and said, yeah, he just wants to act. You call him up.
Right now?
Right now, you could call him up, and if
he'd
got
cross the line, he'd scab.
Oh, I don't know about right now. I don't know if he'd do a non-union gig. You're right; he may not do that. But he's very generous with his talent.
Hot seat. Hollywood is in turmoil right now. Rick, why do you side with the studios?
I'm very pro-union. In fact, been having a lot of philosophical discussions on why the writers and actors unions are robust and involved and what happened with the musicians union to make it basically not be that within our world. And part of it is that idea that, well, everyone became freelancers. But I also feel like Jim and I signed a contract with a major label. We had to become members of the musicians union. The musicians union was a requirement of our contract, which I believe the musicians union negotiated. But the musicians union, for instance, never did any kind of negotiations about the fact that we signed a contract doing works for hire and signing away the masters of our creative work in perpetuity to a large corporation. And I realized, oh yeah, the musicians union didn't step up and start, you know, negotiating in this era of when everyone became a freelancer and everything, you know, work for hire instead of being studio musicians and live sort of performing musicians. And so for me, I'm actually, yeah, looking back and trying to, I'm really supportive. I'm sorry, I know you were making a joke.
You're saying you stand with the actors and
the
writers.
I do stand with the actors and writers.
Okay,
and,
let's be clear. Yeah.
And it frustrates me that as a former member of the musicians union, realizing that something happened in the past 50 years that the musicians union did not take on a more active role in supporting the interests of musicians when the business changed.
Yeah, I didn't even know there was a musicians union, nor would I make it a requirement in any contract I'd sign with any musician to
be a part. And that's the thing, is that it's just an old remnant of 50 or 60 years ago, the musicians union and contracts with major labels.
Is there health care? Because SAG's got great health care.
There is. You could get it through the musicians union, but because of the fact is that the people, it's all based around performance, right? So if you're in the musicians union and you're regularly performing union gigs like orchestra, right? You're in a orchestra, professional, like large urban orchestra. I think it functions in that way. Independent musician with a record label putting out records, you know, for a couple of years on a major label, it's not obtainable for that type of union member. Fully supportive of the stagehands union, those people who work the big shows.
If you want to support the unions or the people in the unions, because they're not trying to bust the unions, they're just trying to get their people more money, support podcasts, because that's where a lot of actors, legitimate, that's not a joke, are actually making their income nowadays. I know a former guest of the show, Michael McLost, a big portion of his income comes from, or I shouldn't say a big portion, but a portion of his income comes from his show, and I know his co-host and wife are out of their acting and makeup jobs because of the strike. So supporting podcasts and Bigfoot Collectors Clubs specifically.
So the advertising revenue from those shows, the show, right, is helping with
and
that.
Their Patreon and yeah, there's all sorts of ways that podcasts make money. We don't make money at all. I just want to be real clear about that. There's no pizza place sending us checks or anything like that.
That's right.
Kansas City, food-wise, once only known as a barbecue town. But thanks to the Taco the Town podcast, Everything has changed. Kansas City has rightfully taken its place as a taco paradise, smack dab in the middle of the USA. And all of these tacos belong to us on the Taco the Town podcast. My name is W. David Keith, certified tacoholic, and I live a very taco-centric lifestyle. On the Taco the Town podcast, we're tasting every taco in the town. We shine a light on all of the taco-rific tacos Kansas City has to offer, unearthing great taco memories, checking the latest stories in taco news, and interviewing actors, reporters, chefs, politicians, and musicians about their love for tacos. If you love tacos like I do, you're gonna love Taco the Town. Available wherever you get your taco podcasts. A proud member of the Lotus Pod Podcasting Network.
Lost and found and
what significant thing we've been watching lately? Let's cover that topic. Let's start with Jim. Jim, media. What media have you been consuming lately that you'd like to mention?
There was a podcast I was listening to. I discovered, I'm not sure where, but it was called the Holmes Archive of Electronic Music. And it's this guy who has he's written a book, I think, and stuff. He's like a musician too, I think, but sort of a scholar, electronic music scholar. And he has this podcast and it's like his collection, or, you know, he just plays weird, obscure stuff from his collection. And one of the episodes was this soundtrack record that he found from this movie called Foes. F-O-E-S, from 1977, and I'd never heard of, and the record, I guess, is really rare. It was only made for the crew, so there's like 20 copies, but he had found one somewhere and played its electronic music from the soundtrack, and it's a really interesting movie. It's like the guy who directed it was sort of a special effects guy. It's a sci-fi film, and this flying saucer comes, and is it before? I guess it's right around, you know, Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
But Cat from Outer Space.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's very esoteric, or it's just very, actually it is kind of like Cat from Outer Space because some of the acting is pretty sketchy because most of
Whoa. How dare you?
Yeah, most of the crew, the actors are pretty...
Do you feel like they should get paid by the studios? If those actors?
I don't know if they, yeah. I don't know. I wonder what they got paid, if they're just some of his friends. But no, he's a real, yeah, I think he was more of a special effects guy. And so it was a very low budget film. And there's a few good actors that kind of stand above the rest of them. But it's an interesting film. I just watched it like on YouTube or something. I don't know if you can even officially stream it anywhere or buy it. You know, I don't know if it ever came out really. Yeah, I'm not sure if it was actually released in the theaters or if it was just on, maybe it was just on TV or something, but I don't know. It's an interesting movie, and the music was really cool.
I feel like I've heard of Foes before. There's something else that covered that movie.
Some of the effects, of course, since he's an effects guy, are pretty cool for low budget. You know, there's some really interesting, I don't want to say you could tell it was not a big budget, but it didn't matter because he obviously knew what he was doing. It was like, oh, this is a cool effect. You know, he got a lot out of, you know, what little money he had. So that it's really cool to watch for that.
That's a good genre of film, special effects people who make their own movies.
Right. It's
especially recently, there's a lot of people who've kind of done that.
Have we talked about, what is it called? Phase 4, the science fiction movie that's directed by Saul Bass, the graphic designer.
Wow. Is it good?
It's beautiful. we should talk about Phase 4 at some point. I think we have talked about it. I've talked about it.
You've talked about Saul Bass, but you didn't talk about Phase 4.
Is it Phase 4 now? See, I've got the name wrong, I think.
Look, I'd know.
Oh, it is Phase 4. IV, yeah. It's an ant movie. It's not, it's an intelligent ant movie, but it's not the one you're thinking of. What's the other one? Empire, Kingdom of the Ants, right?
Mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking of that.
Oh, there's Bug also. There are lots of good insect movies.
What's the one where... There's one about ants that I used to watch on CBS, late night movie. It was about ants. They're just like killer ants, I think was the name of the movie, something like that.
Not Kingdom of the Spiders.
I was thinking, with what's this?
I just remember William Shatner. Someone falling in a garbage dumpster and being eaten alive by ants. Scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Rick, what have you been watching?
I've been watching a lot of Green Acres.
Cool. And why is that?
Just that guitar, the music, the intro, right?
Yeah. No, the music is great. Everything about it is great. I remember being obsessed with it probably when I was a kid, watching it when I was a kid in reruns. And then later on as a young adult, it probably showed up again on TV Land or something. And then watching it now, it's just on one of those free channels and just on like an infinite loop. And so I can have it on and I can do work that doesn't require, you know, like kind of busy work, and I can watch it. Somebody was just talking about, what was it? Talking about Larry Sanders, the Gary Shandling show, about how, meta it was, you know, him talking to the camera and how revolutionary that was. But there's a lot of meta stuff in Green Acres. There's one episode I've seen twice now where, and it's right towards the end of the run of the show, Lisa, played by Eva Gabor. Right.
Eva Gabor.
There's a little girl that's been added into the show for, I think they were just trying it out for a couple episodes. They're sitting at the beginning of the show in the living room of the house, and she says, "This is where the names come up." And then all of a sudden, all the names, like the director, and then these are the important people. And the little girl's like looking, going, "Oh, yeah, wow." And then Eddie Albert comes in and says, "What's going on? I was showing her the names." And he's like, "The names?" It's the absurdity of it, like how out there the show was, you know, and the fact that there's a pig, you know, that everybody treats as a human except for, you know, Eddie Albert's just like, it's a pig. And then if he calls it a pig, they get offended. There's just so much in the show that's insane. And then all these old country guys, so guys who were on WLS radio or on the Grand Ole Opry, the comedy kind of guys. I think more like the barn. What was the barn dance? Was it called WLS?
I think so. It sounds right.
The kind of seminal country radio show. And, you know, that was broadcast across the planet because WLS would just crank its signal, right? And these guys, all these kind of country bumpkin comedy characters that are in it. I don't know. I'm just really enjoying it.
I loved it as a kid.
Yeah, you need to watch it again. It's in the same level as like Rocky and Bullwinkle, you know, those old cartoons, the original. And I'm trying to think of what else. I think we did talk about this before, didn't we? You've listened to the podcast, re-listened to it, because I feel like I looked it up and the guys who did Green Acres also did Hello Larry.
Oh, I think we've talked about Hello Larry.
Yeah.
We never talked about Green Acres, though.
Okay, so that was it. I was like, okay, these guys, and I looked at their history, and it's like they never really got something as good as Green Acres again. And the craziest thing about Green Acres is the last two episodes are backdoor pilots. And so there was the CBS Hillbilly Purge, Country Purge, like where they just, in 1971, they just took all the country kind of shows off the air. Petticoat Junction, Green Acres. I think Beverly Hillbillies was already done. Mayberry RFD, so the post-Andy Griffith one. Was it Sigourney Weaver's father? I can't remember who did it. Just said, we're done with this. New era, you know. All in the Family, you know, the Jefferson. You know, we're gonna.
So Norman Lear.
Norman Lear, yeah.
That's
basically
not a bad switch.
No,
although I love all those old shows.
Yeah, but it was kind of like they hacked all those off. So I think they thought Green Acres, they were going to do another season. And so they just have these two crazy episodes where it's basically like, yeah, them like talking on the phone to somebody, and then all of a sudden it's all these new characters. But it happens twice, so it's I think I talked about it with the Rockford Files. There's like an Isaac Hayes backdoor pilot. Brockelman, Private Eye, was a backdoor pilot.
Was Robin Williams in the end of Green Acres? Did he land and
no,
have a conflict?
Yeah, so like that. Yeah, I don't think that was a backdoor pilot. I think that was like, oh, let's put this guy on Happy Days, and then it was like this guy is so amazing, we're going to make a TV show out of it.
Oh, I think that was a pilot.
You think that was a backdoor pilot?
I think that absolutely was. But watch that episode again. It's very intentional.
I never liked Happy Days.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I watched Pretty Woman, a film by Van Halen that included cultural appropriation, a damsel in distress, cross-dressing, horse riding, the heroic appearance of Napoleon, and other problematic elements I won't list. Oh, and it included the song Intruder, which was the preface. And you'll remember when we covered on our Intruder Alert episode, I talked about the Van Halen song Intruder, which prefaced Pretty Woman on their album because they needed more time to accommodate David Lee Roth's script for the video for Pretty Woman.
Right. Oh, yeah. I do remember you talking about that.
And so I was re-listening to all our episodes and heard me make that joke. And I was like, you know, I've never seen the video for Pretty Woman. I watched it. It is extremely troubling.
I didn't know. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah, I would not encourage anybody to watch it. And it's interesting that at the end, Napoleon is the hero of the video, which just sort of tells you everything about it.
I do remember an interview with David Lee Roth talking about like videos, and it's just like, it's obvious when you watch them, but it's just like, I basically just come up with a bunch of ideas and then we film them. You know, it was like that. It's actually similar to David Lynch, right? Talking about, I write an idea for a scene on a 3x5 card, and when I have, 70 cards, then I have a movie. It's kind of wow. like that. It was like, yeah. So there's some connection between those two auteurs.
You can see the connection between those two approaches to making films if you watch the video of Pretty Woman and David Lynch film, but then you also can see the ideological, I don't know, that's not the right word, where those two sit in terms of society. Mm-hmm. their opinions on society. They're kind of radically different. Before we conclude here, because we're, as I used the term before, time boxing, again, you both owe me a couple $100 for just me saying that.
Saying that, that's... It's you check it off on the list. It's right. Like these are the things. Yeah,
let's call that a half hour. It's for our segment called Color Me Impressed, where we talk about things that are out in the world with no call to action. Again, you know, this is a show of no call to action. We talked about podcasts making money or being self-promoting. That's not what we do here. So anyway, I did want to mention some things that are out in the world. Poster Children have re-released Flower Plower. They're seminal album, I think, on a double LP black and white vinyl, beautifully remastered by Bob Western with bonus tracks engineered by the album's original engineers, Ian Burgess and Steve Albini. The Sun Eaters album, Sun Eaters 4, Absinthe Makes the Heart Grow Fingers, got on the Big Takeover's top 200 albums of 2022. Mm-hmm. Richard Normal Valentin put out his first Richard Normal Valentine put out his first virtual 7-inch titled A Little Rain with the B-side Tomorrow's Teardrops. I loved it. And then Bully Pulpit released their fourth and best album, Natural Flavors. They tend to put out an album once every 10 years, so it's interesting to hear their latest. It's phenomenal.
40-year-old band then, huh?
30-year-old band.
Oh, okay. Every 10 years. So this is
the fourth album.
Year zero. Year 10, year 20, year 30. Got it.
Yeah.
The Jesus BC AD paradox.
I will announce our film that we'll be watching today. It's the, as we said before, 2016 film Shin Godzilla. Have either of you seen it?
No.
But, well, I kind of, you know, spent a little bit of time glancing at it while I was transferring it to VHS.
I passed Family Video on the way here and thought I could go in there and rent it and then show up and know like, Rick's going to make some snarky comment. But if I could show up with it on VHS, I'd be in good shape.
But unfortunately, the Family Video is abandoned and is now just the pizza place that was the kind of parasitic pizza place that was attached to all Family Videos to kind of help it sustain through those last stages.
I didn't realize they were closed.
Yeah, so the Family Video is empty, but the pizza place attached to it is still active.
Okay. This is not a film you can rent on VHS or Beta. Maybe we'll get to it on Beta. But
Japan, right? Of course. I bet there is. Look it up, man.
Yeah, if I can find it on Beta, I'll be in good shape. But I have my reasons for why I picked this film. So we'll go over those when we watch the movie and talk about it.
All right.
Cool.
All right. Let's go get some pizza.
Woo.
Yeah.
Lost and Found and Rewound is fully funded by Lost and Found and Rewound Foundation Funds. Lost and Found and Rewound does not use crowdfunding because our listeners have better things to do with their funding. There's no need to post reviews of Lost and Found and Rewound, because our listeners have more valuable things to do with their time. In all sincerity, thank you for listening to the show. We truly appreciate it.
Lotus Pod.